Okay, we're going to start this year on the condition people continue to take. As long as you struggle with the water, that's fine. I'm not watching you. It's okay.
Water's food.
I definitely judge, by the way, so it's okay.
That would have fallen.
Ted Lasso.
I think you're going to drop a cop to that.
Yeah?
Oh, I haven't watched season 3.
Well, I'm waiting until it all comes out.
I'm so happy this is such a good showing for our first year of what will hopefully be many shirm on the topic of, well, honestly, anything. I'm just happy to have a chance to schmooze, a chance to learn. I feel like parenting is a good way to start out. A better way to start out is to thank our sponsors for this evening, without whom we wouldn't have this delicious spread. So thank you to Rivi and Avi Bloom, and to Orly and Eric Tabor, who are sponsoring Le'ili Nishmas, their grandmother, Sarah Ita Bas Ephraim Fischel, whose Shloshim was just last week. Her, she was an amazing woman who valued Talmud Torah and education. Am I close?
No, absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah.
I told him that today.
All right. I think I voted in also.
Right, but I also had a sense, because it's just a special person.
Yeah, no, she did.
May our learning and breakfast this evening be a true ile for her neshama.
Amen.
So Ahuba told her mother that we're hosting a series about parenting, and she said, have these people seen your kids? Which I assume what she meant was, your kids are so perfect. Have they seen your kids? They would have asked for a class earlier because they know just all the wisdom you have to share. Let me give you the first disclaimer of the evening. And that first disclaimer is I do not pretend to be a perfect parent. I don't even pretend to be a good parent. If you think I'm just being humble, you obviously haven't seen our kids at the Shul Kiddush. The ones climbing on the tables and taking one bite of every single cookie.
The yum is amazing.
The yum is great so far. So far, so great. But I'm certainly not pretending that I have all the wisdom. We're going to learn together a beautiful sefer on the topic of chinuch, and to learn together, because Ahuba knows everything, but I feel like this is a great opportunity for me to learn as well. And secondly, we'd like to make this forum more general, not to turn it into a specifics about particular cases, particular kids, but just more about general principles of behavior, about chinuch, and hopefully we'll be able to each apply them in our own homes, in our own institutions. And that'll be a great source of knowledge for us. I want to introduce our author for this series, and that is Rav Shlomo Volbe. In English, it's spelled with a W. I'm sure many people have heard of Rav Shlomo Volbe. Shlomo Volbe was actually a Baal Tshuva. He was born August Wilhelm Volbe. That was his name. He was born in Berlin, in a secular home. He went to University of Berlin, where he studied philosophy, psychology, a lot of interesting things. He became frum in the 1930s when he was in university. Eventually, he studied in the Mir, a little different than, but this is the Mir in Poland, under Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitch, who was the Mashgiach over there, who became his Rebbe. During the war years, he was exported from Poland, where he couldn't stay, being a national German citizen. And he spent the war years in Sweden. There's a story about him that when he was in Sweden, he felt very lonely. There was really not much of a Jewish community in Sweden, and missed his yeshiva, he missed his Rebbe, and he really missed everyone. And he remembered something very, very special to him. He said that every day when he was in Mir Yeshiva, one Talmud got the zechus of walking the Mashgiach, Rabbi Yerucham Lubavitch, around the block. And it was like so envious. Everyone was so envious about the person who got to have alone time with Rabbi Yerucham. And people used to watch and hope for their turn. And he said, you know, here in Sweden where there's no yeshiva, there's really nothing going on Jewish-wise, it's just me and Hashem. It's like alone time that I have with Hashem. So as much as it's a little bit isolating right now, and that thought really, he said, that thought really carried him through all the years he spent in Sweden. And he was able to produce a Kirov organization there. He did a lot of great Kirov while he was in Sweden. Eventually, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He studied in yeshivas. He opened yeshivas, became a mashgiach. And he's most famous for his authorship of the Sefer Ali Shur, published in the 1960s. This is a classic work of Musar. You can really, when you learn the Sefer, you really get a sense of his depths of philosophy and psychology, the way he was so specific to the generation that he was experiencing, and not just assuming that the ways of old of parenting or educating or acting are just going to carry on. You see his real attention to sophistication and nuance. Later in life, he gave a parenting class, kind of like this. There was sushi, there was poppers, just exactly like this. There was a women's section, everything was exactly probably just like this. And he gave a series of classes in Yerushalayim, which eventually typed up into this little tiny pamphlet called Zriya Ubinyan Bechinach. We're going to talk about that. So first topic today, introducing this whole series, planting and building in the area of education, which is later translated by Art Scroll, which you could buy for just a few dollars, called Planting and Building and Raising a Jewish Child. And this book was not written by him, but it is the notes from the lectures that he gave in this parenting series, published in 1995. And it really is a masterwork. Again, someone who was clearly understanding of the generation he was talking to, you know, he's credited, to us it seems obvious, but again, thinking about the world that he lived in, he is credited with being one of the first mechanchim to really change the tide about not hitting children, both at home, both in school. That was something that, again, seems obvious to us, and how could that only be 40, 50 years ago? But again, that was only 40, 50 years ago.
Wow.
But that was something that he really understood, and there's many other examples we'll go through where his wisdom, again, some of the things may seem obvious to us, but again, going back 30, 40 years, especially when he was operating in a Haredi community, this was a very big deal, and he's credited with a lot of monumental shifts in terms of sensitivity and focus on each child in the areas of chinuch. So I gave you the copy of the introduction to the Sefer, which is very short. And then just the first few pages to talk about the introduction to this whole topic of what he means when he talks about planting and building. What are planting? What is building? And what exactly is the difference between them? But before that, he gives a little hakdama, an introduction, where he explains the importance of this work, which is not only true for his lecture at the time, the writing of this book, but also our learning here tonight. Why is it so important that we take time out of our schedules to study about parenting? So that hakdama is page Zion on the bottom, and it starts like this. Hachinuch hu mishima rishona b'mala. He says that education, this could be applied for parenting, for teaching, as in a school, a yeshiva, and even for adult education. He says that education is really a mission that really has to come first on the list. That this mission is going to determine the future of the people, both in terms of growing up healthy and actually being alive, but also in terms of its value system. The Torah system depends on the ways in which it's able to be transmitted. Education is a responsibility, a mission that really is placed on every single person who's a parent. No one has the right to say, Ani mitpater min ha-misra hazo, that I don't have to deal with this. If someone is a parent, if someone has brought a child into the world, they have no right to ask for an exemption, tax exemption maybe, but they have no right to say that I don't have a responsibility to carefully engage in this task of educating children. On the other hand, there's something natural about a desire to want to train your kids. Not just because people in the shul are watching them climb on the table, but there's something that comes with, hey, I produce these children, so there's an obligation. People naturally feel a need to educate their children. Everyone wants to do the best job they can educating their children. We need to stop and recognize that chinuch is not just an intuitive thing we could just, from the gut, just decide haphazardly. We can't backhandedly stumble blindly into this discipline. It requires a lot of deep thought. When we talk hargash of an echash, a person can't just go based on intuition or gut. I'll just go based on what seems right in the moment. I'm a parent. I know when to get angry. I know when to put my foot down. I know when to say yes. I know when to say no. I know when to teach this. I know how to say this. Let me just do what feels right. And I'll probably be okay. He disagrees. He doesn't think it's the kind of thing people should do just by the seat of their pants. The discipline of education really requires study and requires great focus. And if only it were so that after so much dedication and study into this great discipline, we should have success in the matter. We're definitely not going to have success in the matter if we just stumble into it haphazardly, just assume it's going to be all right because, well, it was okay today, it was okay tomorrow. We need to properly have categories, we need to properly understand what different behaviors are and what different parenting techniques are. To understand which avenues and which methods are successful ways of education. And which methods are not successful in passing on lessons or passing on morals to the next generation. There are some things that parents or educators or institutions do that are very counterproductive, very counterintuitive. And they produce very unwanted results. We need to properly highlight those too. Not just to highlight what works, but to highlight what doesn't work in the realm of chinuch. People do something that seems to be a contribution, it seems to be bettering for the lives of children, Avo behesbonenus yoser penimus. If you look a little closer, uvistaklus l'tvach aroch. And if you look at the long game, misbar ki pa'ulos eila ein behem chinuch. Some things we're going to talk about over the course of the series that seem, from a parenting or educational perspective, to be successful. For example, for many years, people thought that hitting was actually a very, very strong value in terms of getting kids to stop misbehaving, to set boundaries, to be able to impart knowledge of what's right and what's wrong. It wasn't just people knew it was wrong and they hit. People thought they were doing a valuable lesson when they were hitting. People thought that was actually beneficial. And again, as obvious as it sounds to us, he was one of the first to come out publicly in the Haredi world and say, no, it's not only not helpful, it's actually very counterproductive. And sometimes things that seem to be productive are actually counterproductive. We need to really figure out what these things are. Why do people think they are effective? And why, in fact, are they not effective? That's the sound we want to hear. At the end of the introduction, he points out with sadness, Hayom chasra ma'od ha-toda'a shechina chu chachmas ha-dereshus limud. He says that nowadays people lack the awareness that education is a discipline that really requires study, careful study. Lefamim afilu b'tzibor shel morim u'mechanchim chasra toda'a zo. Even among educators, you would think they're the educators, the ones hired to teach our children. They're the ones who should know the best just what a difficult discipline it is and how much study it requires. But the reality is, it's been a wonderful recent movement that schools require master's degree and require proper study. Because it's not so obvious. In fact, more schools are having school psychologists who are eating and here, right? It's a very important thing, right? That wasn't true 20 years ago. It wasn't true 50 years ago. For every school to have social workers and have guidance counselors and have people who are trained in mental health and educators who are trained in areas of discipline and areas of classroom management, those were not given. And maybe in certain communities, it's still not a given that all the teachers who are going into it are going into it because they have received proper education. There are studies and there are journals and there are tests and there are experiments to figure out what is proper education, what is not. Based on small classrooms, big classrooms, this age, that age, gender, so many factors that go into play, but it requires study. You can't just assume, I like learning, so I'll probably like teaching. Unfortunately, that's a misconception. When people go into teaching profession because they say, I really enjoy learning Torah, so I'll probably like teaching Torah. And then they're in the system where like they're teaching kids, and the kids aren't getting it, and they're like, these chavrusas of mine aren't working out. Well, do you know what field you entered into? Teaching should not be some second-class position where it's just, I can't do any... What did George Bernard Shaw say? Those who can't do, teach. Mm-hmm. Woody Allen added on, those who can't do, teach. Those who can't teach, teach them. Is that what he said? I don't personally believe any of that. I think teaching is the most impressive profession that's out there, the most important profession. I just wish that place is paid according to that understanding. But it really is the most important thing, and we've come to a place where we recognize the importance of study. Again, speaking of discipline and not hitting is one example, but the idea that educators should be educated in education is something that he's really fighting for at a time when that wasn't the norm. And in many communities, it's still not the norm. You can open a Gemara, you can read a Gemara, okay, you're teaching Gemara to kids. Where's the patience? Where's the discipline? Where's the understanding? Where's the ability to be clear? The ability to be having good expositional skills? It's not obvious. Just because you like learning, you're going to like teaching, or you're going to like students. Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky from DRS, who's a really master mechanech, him and his Rebbetzin, really phenomenal teachers. I once heard him say that when he interviews Rebbeim and teachers, one question he likes to ask them is, why do you want to go into teaching and things like that? And the worst answer he gets is, I like to learn. I'm so excited about math, so I want to be a math teacher. I'm excited about Gemara, so I want to be a Gemara teacher. He said, what bothers him most is when he has teachers who want to teach math or want to teach Gemara. He says, I want teachers who want to teach students. If you want to teach math, you like math. If you want to teach Gemara, you like Gemara. If you want to teach students, that's a person who's sensitive to the needs of each child. That's a person who's going to be patient when the child isn't getting it. That's a person who's going to consider it a productive day, even if the lesson plan that he or she laid out isn't covered. Because it isn't about the math, and it isn't about the science, or about the Gemara, about the Chumash, or the Navi, or anything else. It's about the students. And if something seems like Ravolvi is talking about, shout out for Tuesday night, Ravolvi is here. But Ravolvi is pointing out that things seem productive. They seem like good chinuch to just, we have to finish the material. If we give out 6 pages of source sheets, we're going to go through 6 pages of source sheets. That seems like good chinuch. It seems like it's good education because we're not going to let the kids run the classroom. We're not going to be flexible. We're not going to be understanding. Maybe that's counterproductive. Maybe that's not the right way to go through chinuch. He ends off the introduction. To actually actualize proper education, we have to really think deeply about what it is we're about to do. And for parenting he's talking about, not just for school, but for parenting. In individual homes, parents really have to think about discipline and lessons that they're teaching and how they're going to go about it. Yes, questions, comments?
No, I just wanted to say, it's a different world today than it was in the previous generation. Today you have all kinds of distractions and dangers, but like never before. The amount of children experiencing difficulties with school and religion and everything is unprecedented because of the lure of devices, internet, things like that.
That's right. It's a good teacher who knows where to meet the children at. If you're living in a technology world, it's the best approach to shut down technology or to actually utilize technology, right? To one who's sensitive to the times, to the society, to the generation, to actually know that. Very good. So now, to understand the introduction to the whole work and why it's called, it's for me, thank you very much. To understand really why the work is called planting and building, that's going to be the topic for tonight, to round this out. We'll go up till about 9:30 or so. Anyone has to leave earlier, don't be embarrassed if you have to go. Hopefully someone's watching the kids if you're here. Otherwise, that'd be really counterproductive. We're going to class on parenting. So kids that's
fine.
Home Alone 6.
They're sleeping. You have to watch them and they're sleeping.
Come back for next week. We'll talk about it. So why does he call it planting and building? What does it have to do with anything? This is where he's going to introduce the foundation of the entire concept. On page Tess on the bottom. Smicha Obinyan. Planting and building. Tzfilas Amida and Shmona Esrei. Anu Mevarchem Shtei Brachos B'Inyan Yerushalayim. We have two brachos that are geared toward the future for redemption. Bona Yerushalayim. Umatzmiach Karen Yeshua. Ha'achas Shashem Bona Yerushalayim. The verb used is about building our future, building Yerushalayim. Vashniya, the second verb is Shashem Matzmiach as a Mashiach. Hashem should be able to cause to sprout out of the ground Mashiach. Tzmicho binyan elu shtei pehulos shonos. The acts of planting and the acts of building are really two different functions. Tzmicha, hitalech tivi ba'olam hazeh. Planting is a very natural, organic process. The planting requires putting the seeds in the right place, but the actual growth is not done with hand holding. The growth itself happens organically. Yes, there's some role of the farmer to plant in the beginning of the process, but the growth, what actually becomes taller and bigger and more impressive, happens organically on its own. It's tzomeach meilav, perach, tzomeach meilav. Trees and flowers and plants and bushes, they all grow on their own.
But it doesn't necessarily grow on its own. Sometimes you have to do pruning and doing additional stuff that's going to make it grow. It's not necessarily only on its own.
That's true. Sometimes it's growing weeds, right? Sometimes it's growing in a way. What'd you say?
Well, pruning, you gotta get these haircuts and then the nail is the hardest part.
Right? So sometimes, it's a good point, right? Sometimes growth by itself is a dangerous process, right? Bad things are growing and it's not growing the way you want, so it requires upkeep. That's definitely true. But the act of growing itself is something that it happens on its own, but you're right, in order to do it properly, you would have to still be involved in the process. Binyan, on the other hand, building, hudavar sha'adam oseh, every act of building is done by the hand of the workers. Meniach yesod, he puts down a foundation, v'achar kach meniach nidbach, al gabi nidbach, tier of bricks on top of tier of bricks, ad shabayas muchan, every step of growth by building requires active handling, whereas growth of a plant really happens, the growth itself is happening organically. HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world with these two forces. Think about it. As we think about the future, from now until Mashiach Tzidkenu, we're always thinking about these two processes of how much Hashem is involved, how much we're involved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world, so he's actively building. He has a direct involvement in our lives. Right? He also wants that we should be the ones to bring about Mashiach in a way that's deserving. and that there should be some form of natural progression to the world toward the ultimate geula. We always talk about Tzmicha. Melech HaMeis Mechayom HaTzmiach Yeshua, and Mashiach himself, a Navi, is called Tzemach. So this is the idea. Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world with direct intervention, but he also allows us the free will to be able to bring things out on our own. Turn to the next page, where those lines are on the bottom. He gives another example of where we find these two processes. We're going to start to break this from the abstract down to the very practical. The first idea is that Kadosh Baruch Hu, when he runs the world, there's ways in which he has direct intervention, and there's times where he allows us to achieve geula on our own. In the last big paragraph, Dugma l'shtei b'chinos Elohi. Another example where we find this dual processing, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Because Rosh Hashanah, we'll say this part outside, so Rosh Hashanah is a day without really any tshuva. There's no vidi in Rosh Hashanah. We're not officially making any kabbalos. We're not making any promises for the future. Today about just acknowledging Hashem as our King and hearing the shofar to wake us up and inspire us that we have to be better. Just vaguely. We're not making any concrete, any practical decisions for Rosh Hashanah. There's no vidui for the past. There's no plan for the future. It's just a general sense of I got to be better in some way or another. That is the planting stage. There's just something organic that's about to happen. We're just trying to lay the foundations, lay the seeds for the coming year, just to till the soil and plant proper seeds so that the organic need to be better and change is there. And then we come to Yom Kippur. And on Yom Kippur, we're actually making concrete steps. We're actually laying a foundation. We're doing tshuva on specific mistakes. We're figuring out where these mistakes came from and what we can do in the future to make them different. We're very hands-on with our future. We're very much taking piece by piece, brick by brick, and trying to build it up in that way. And together, when a person combines Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that's the Aseres Tshuva. That's a time of change, where we talk about both just a general sense of wanting to be better, a general sense of there's a right way to be and I need to be better. And there's also the very concrete, very practical binyan that comes in Yom Kippur, step by step, brick by brick. And we'll look at page 11.
You know, maybe like Rosh Hashanah is more of, I feel like it's more of a happy vibe. You know, you get to eat, right? Everyone's together. And when you're, you know, there's two stages. There's positivity when you're dealing with people, and there are times where you have to be firm. Maybe that's like Yom Kippur, where it's like, okay, shape up. You know, you have to, you know, you have one day left in terms of how your future is determined. So, you know, that dichotomy of, you know, the positivity and the seriousness of Yom Kippur speaks to, you know, sometimes how you have to be as a parent.
I love that. I think that's really great. That dichotomy that you highlighted very well. The ability to be happy and joyful and uplifting. At the same time, there needs to be boundaries. There need to be strict rules in place. Excellent. So this is where he turns to talking about Chinuch. So he describes the general process of Zriya and Binyan, the idea of planting and building. Planting is such an organic process where there's some seeds to be laid, and that's the obligation on the one who's starting the process. But at the end of the day, the growth is happening more organically. There's not as much direction. It's more free. It's more loose. It's more open. It's more individualized. And then Yom Kippur, for example, is the day where it's much more structured in terms of each person and combining it together. It's the everyone is trying to take on something, but that's personalized. So the idea of taking something on is regimented. Doing tshuva is a mitzvah on Yom Kippur. It has to be done. But what each person chooses to do is very free. And that's a balance of those two ideas together. Then we come to Chinuch of children. He's Al Derech Zo Navinas on page 11, on the second paragraph. Al Derech Zo Navinas in Yan Hatzmicha V'Habinyan B'Chinuch Yiladeinu V'Gam B'Chinuch Hatzmeinu. Well, for educating children, adults, or ourselves. If we want a child to grow up as someone who values Torah learning and values performance of mitzvos, we have to put some proper seeds there. Quotes on the Gemara in Sukkah. Once a kid is old enough to know how to speak, parent has an obligation to teach Torah and Kriyishma. Once a kid has the capacity to make sounds, once has the capacity to speak words. Torah mahi. What do you teach a child when they can know how to speak? Amar Pamnuna, Torah Tiva Lani Moshe. Very common practice. We teach kids from the very beginning the idea of Torah Tiva Lani Moshe. Revolbi explains that why is this considered to be an act of planting? He says, Dvarim Elu Heim Heim HaDvarim HaPshebehem Yehez Shoresh Dibura. We're talking about the roots, just the general concept of speech, and we're trying to take the concept and teach a child where it's supposed to go, where it's underlined. He says, Zoe Isriya, that's what it means to plant something. Hayelat Shomel Rishana B'Chayav Sheyesh Lanu Torah B'Hayelanu Navi Gadol. Chad learned some very basic concepts, very, very core concepts. There's a Torah, there's Moshe, he's a Navi, we have to keep the mitzvot, we have to live a certain way, we have to follow certain ideals, we have to strive for being good to each other and to learn Torah and do mitzvot. That's what you call Zriya. We're not telling a child in that moment everything they're supposed to do with a very rigid list of yeses and nos, but in that moment we're kind of priming the child, we're trying to give them the basic foundation, the roots, that is going to hopefully allow the child to thrive on their own. Skip down to where it's bolded. Ala binyan, shebechinach, anemotzim ba'avos, Chazal talk about the very structured and concrete way of education. Ben chamesh lemikra, ben esr lemishnah, ben chamesh esrei legemara. Chazal give us rules about certain ages, time to start learning chumash, at a certain age, time to learn mishnah, and learn gemara. Those are very, very rigid. Those are very much the building aspect. Lemdunu chazal sheyesh madrigos betalich binyan ha'adam, the Talmud Chacham. There's also very concrete steps. Not just a general sense of Torah and Moshe and Navi and Mesorah. Those are very general ideas we plant in a child that they can hopefully understand. But we also want to build actual context. We want to actually give them significant content. We want to give them all the books of Moshe. We want to give them all the books of the Nevi'im. We want to give them all the books of Shas. That's actually very concrete. He writes a very important idea. We have to understand where a child is at. Chazal did not say, when the child turns 5, dump everything on them. Chumash and Tanya and whatever the child wants to, just dump everything on them. There's different stages. We have to properly understand what a child is able to handle. And if we put on too much too fast, or give a child too much information before they're ready to hear it, it's not going to work out well. Go to the last page. Because Yelad hu yitzur chai, a child is a living being. It's a living creature. Hu gadel, he grows. Just like he grows physically, he also has spiritual and also emotional development. As Yeshua mentioned before, that we have to actually be hands-on when it comes to the growth of a child. When a plant, when something actually is growing, we have to be attentive. It's very important. If you want someone to be produce, if you want something to produce the plant that we want, you got to plant the right seeds. Can't plant tomato seeds and be surprised when tomatoes grow and say, I thought this was a cucumber plant. You have to understand what it is you're planting and to take care of it along the way. The next paragraph. Mitzad sheni, yesh binyan. You have to be attentive to the content that we're providing. Tzrichim levnos adam. In order to build up someone, you can't just rely on the fact that, well, they have a natural organic growth process and I'll just come once in a while and just point them in the right direction or prune away any bad behaviors. We have to actually build one on top of the other. And then he gives us the clincher for tonight, to really understand what it is that, why both these processes of education are necessary. We're talking about the idea of giving a child content, giving a child books, giving a child messages, being very specific in what we teach them. But we're also talking about being able to give them the sense of organic growth, to prime them so they could develop in their own way. He says, if a person's only going to give the word boldish, to give a child just the free rein to grow whatever feels organic, they're not going to have any scruples, they're not going to have any values, because they're just going wild. Are you thinking of my kids at the kiddush? Right? If the kid is just left to their own devices and we say, look, they have their own natural sense of right and wrong. Look, they're so individualized. They have their sense of their personality and their interests and their hobbies. Let's just let the kid run with it. Well, then they're going to be a wild beast. But if we're going to do the opposite and just, okay, crush any sense of individuality or just force feed this book and this lecture and this, osamimeno robot. That's a Hebrew word for robot, right? The child's going to become a mechanical beast. Instead of being a wild beast, become a mechanical beast. From AI, which actually is pretty good these days. But that's all the kid's going to become because they're being spoon-fed and they're being told exactly what to say and what to think and what job to have and how to live their lives. There's no individuation there. It's the combination of these two factors together. Both fostering a sense of organic growth to give a child space to actually, on their own, develop in a natural way that makes sense for what's planted there, what their actual personality, with their temperament, their IQ, to actually allow them to foster according to their individual growth. And also, umasa habinyan, also to balance that with what is important knowledge they have to know. What are disciplines? What are moral lessons and educational lessons that they have to hear from someone else top down? We have the top down and the grassroots. We need to have both of them. Zeo achinach, that's what he says. That's what chinach means. Chinach means to combine the organic growth. We want to promote in each child the ability to be able to develop according to what their underlying seed is. And at the same time, to stack on top of it, to help them receive the messages that we hold so dear to ourselves. Zos Ameris, the bottom line is, Tzrichem levnos yeler b'hisyach sus el tzmichasa. We have to build with an attention to the natural growth. You know, I think that, to make this really practical, again, this is a nice idea, it's a nice foundation of things to come, but I was doing some research into modern psychology to see, you know, some practical steps that we could all take to think about this in very real terms. And I found that there is a psychologist, I kid you not, her name is Alison Gopnik, who studied at, I think, Oxford, and she's a psychologist at UC Berkeley, who wrote a book in 2016. Her book is called The Gardener and the Carpenter. That's her book. 20 years after Revolvi wrote a book about planting and building, she wrote a book about education, which she called The Gardener and the Carpenter. Trademarked. No one else can use that name ever again. But that's really exactly what Foundation Revolvi wrote about and spoke about so many years before, but a modern psychologist wrote a book about that same thing. I think for us, it's important to think about the growth aspect, what it means to foster a child's individuation, because we know education of the binyan, right? All these books, all these lessons, we just spoon-feed them, they have to know this, they have to know right, they have to know wrong, we don't run in the street, we don't pull hair, right? We don't spit back at our people. These are just random examples. No specific reason why I think of these. Right? But we're all very good at understanding that education has to have a very curriculum-based, a very much text-sourced building, and that's very important. If we were really emphasizing on free-spirited and everyone does whatever they want, I'd probably focus more on why it's important to have a serious binyan. The education system, both in schools and also in yeshivos and also in homes, tends a lot more to be binyan, a lot more of the structured, rigid rules, yes, no. In her book, Dr. Alison Gopnik has a lot of good examples of how to foster the gardening side, what it means to really have this tzmicha, as Revolvi put it. She argues that a lot of times when people have trouble with their children, nothing is foolproof, but a lot of the problems come from sculpting too much, what Revolvi called building too much. Because we choose a child's extracurriculars. We lay out for them the ways in which they're supposed to be, what they're supposed to study, and what they're supposed to do for hobbies, whether it's sports or it's music. We kind of have a sense. And what she would like to see more of is people giving a child a smattering of seeds, whether it's music and sports and a lot of different art and all kinds of things, and then letting them choose. And even within those things, just because the parent played violin doesn't mean the child needs to be a violinist. Even if the child does have an aptitude for music, who says they have to go into the exact same instrument or type of performance or even performance as the parent? Maybe sprinkle a couple of seeds and give them different options and allow them to grow. She quotes an amazing study that was done in 2007 by two psychologists from Rutgers, where they had researchers give a four-year-old a complicated toy. Like, complicated toy, I mean, it did a lot of different things. It squeaked, and it had a mirror, and a light, and a crunchy thing. And they gave it to a four-year-old. And when they gave it to the four-year-old, just without saying anything, they gave it to the kid. The four-year-old eventually was able to discover the squeak, and the mirror, and the crunchy thing, and the light. But when the experimenters gave the four-year-old the toy with the following introduction of, "This is my toy, it squeaks," and gave it to the kid, much more often, the kid just ended up squeaking the toy the whole time. When a parent gives that rigid understanding of what this is to a child, the child is limited by that priming, of that framing of the issue. Okay, this is a toy, so it squeaks, so it's a squeaker. And the child sits there and squeaks the toy. When a parent gives the kid free hands-on and says, "Now, this is a toy," and the kid on their own gets to explore, that's how they're able to discover more opportunities. And that's not just true in terms of toys, but it's true in terms of life as well.
Isn't that a little, like, slippery in terms of, like, what you're allowing them to do, though? Like, I mean, I would agree that, like, you should give them some freedom to be themselves, but wouldn't you want to lean more towards, like, the building and, like, especially, like, in a Jewish home, you want them to lean more towards, like, strictness and what we know as right versus wrong? No.
That's a great point, right? So it's definitely the balance of the planting and the building. And at the same time, it's also a matter of choosing which seeds to put out there, right? You could put out seven different seeds, but kind of give kids a forced choice. right? If you tell kids they have to do something, they don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. But if you give them like one of two options, then they feel like they're choosing it themselves. Instead of telling them, right? So instead of, right, my example always is like, instead of telling them you have to wear these pajamas, instead of telling the kids you have to wear the pajamas tonight, give them a choice. Give them a free choice of, do you want to wear Frozen or Frozen 2, right? Those are always those are always going to be very big differences, right?
Isn't it just me, though? It sounds like a little opposite of what we've been saying this whole time. Like you're saying, like, or whatever the book is saying, that it needs to be like very, like we talked about the planting, and we were saying how like, oh, it could be weeds, or it could be, it's like you have to kind of take care of it, but now you're saying that the way to take care of it is to give it more freedom.
So it's a balance, right? It's a balance of not giving, like you mentioned, Jeff, like to not to give too many options. But at the same time, we want a child to feel like they're choosing, right? So for a secular psychologist, you might be talking about the sky is the limit and everything, right? But in terms of within a framework of a building structure, and even with pruning things that we don't like in terms of the growth and correcting behaviors that we're not okay with, but to just, I think that the main point about the growth, the organic growth, is not that anything goes, right? The way that Rebelvi put it was, become a wild beast if you're just growing. But to not forget to incorporate into our chinuch the notion of wanting each child to find their own within that framework, right? So if it's music versus art or within art, right? Meaning, I think there's a lot of wiggle room within a certain level of confine.
Within a healthy structure.
I mean, I guess a plant won't grow without enough space, right? Yeah,
it's true. Sunlight.
I think also, like, for me, I take it more as like a comment for a parent for the philosophy, and not kind of like what you're giving to the child. So it reminds me of very similar to like an article I remember reading, I think in like the Times or something. And it talked about like not limiting your kid. And so actually said things like, don't tell your child, and I try not to, like, don't tell your kid you're so smart or like you're so good at math, because you've just limited them to something specific. So now, like, when you tell your kid you're so good at math, they don't know that they're also could be good at art or writing or English. And you don't even realize that's something that they're like so happy to be confident in, but then they lose interest in some of these other things they might've been more exposed to. And that like was very, like, it clicked a lot for me when I read it that way, because they also encourage doing things more like, wow, you tried so hard. You did that. That was so great. And just trying to give myself the space to say, like, leave that open, I think might be what he's trying to say, versus it being like, these are the rules that the child should understand if there's rules, or like a smichut. Like it's right. More of for us to be a little more open, I think, to see how the child can flourish on their own.
Right. A parenting mindset, because you want to foster their talents and not lose a sense to praise where they can be praised, and at the same time not to close off potentially other options for them that could really be good for them.
Right.
Right. I think that's a really important balance.
It also kind of reminds me of like when a child as having certain issues, right? Whether it's at home or at school, part of it is understanding that the child might have, like, for example, if a child has speech-language issues, right? So you have to understand, right, that the child, it's not their fault, right? That's just how they're naturally developing, but then you also have to kind of find ways to give them strategies to improve upon that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like having the understanding of how they are growing, but also giving them the tools, the building blocks for growth in a different way.
I love that, right? To acknowledge limitations, either because of religious limitations or how far we can go, right?
So, I should have said OT skills,
but it really is true for everything, right? In any area of growth, right? It's a matter of recognizing limitations, and within whatever is possible to give a child autonomy to some extent. Right. And I think you're right, Orly, that it's not a matter of, you know, telling a child, like, you can do anything you want. It's from a parenting perspective to come in with a mindset of, I want to have rigid structure and concrete values, and also I want my child within those confines of those concrete values to be able to find their own path in it.
And I think it also gives, like, a nechama to people. I think all of us, like, every child has this, but obviously there's a spectrum of, like, when you're struggling or having challenges with a child, or maybe even a child that has special needs, because you first, I think, have to understand the seed before you can put the rules or the structure. You have to know, like, what your kid could be capable of, because not everyone's going to fit within all of that same guideline.
That's true, right? So you need to have the sense of binyan to know within what framework to grow. And you're saying also to know a basic sense of what the growth looks like, to know where to put the boundaries. Otherwise, they're just, I'd be building boundaries that are way too narrow or way too expansive, right? You need to know both areas of it.
Aside for, you know, having a variety of options within a healthy structure, there's also something to just giving the kid confidence to be able to choose, like he's making the decisions, you know, and building his self-esteem. It's not just, you know, putting them in a structure where they're not exposed to certain things, but also giving them that ability to choose, correct?
Absolutely, that sense of autonomy. I just want to end off with a couple more practical examples, and we'll end with this. There's another psychologist, Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett, who's a Harvard neuroscientist and psychologist. She has a book called 7.5 Lessons About the Brain, where she talks about raising intelligent kids with flexible, resilient brains. And again, we're focusing more on the Zriya part because the binyan is kind of more structured. It's about their values, it's Shabbos, it's kashrus, it's a certain foundation which we all want our families to have. But again, where do we foster the sense of flexibility? So one of her examples is teaching kids about emotions from a very young age, right? That this is the building blocks we're talking about, the planting side, but these are the seeds to give kids the capacity and the language to understand a variety of situations. Too often we just, that was wrong. We don't really explain to a kid why it was wrong. We don't really explain to the kid what they're supposed to take away. It may seem obvious to us why they're not supposed to eat all the cookies, right? So then what the kid walks away with is, I'm not allowed to eat all the cookies because my parents says so. My authoritarian figure doesn't want me to. When the parent's not there, what's the kid going to do? I get to explain to the kid the reasons why they don't eat all the cookies. So obviously I can have them as a parent. But you want to explain to the kid the consequences, you'll get a stomach ache. Your brothers and sisters are going to be really upset and disappointed, and it's not thinking about them. Very often kids ask why. Why? Why this? Why is it like that? And we're tempted to just be like, because I said so. Because you want to put that binyan, you want to put that structure in place, that Yom Kippur, we want to put that tough boundary and say, you don't get to question. I know for myself, I get very defensive as a parent. The kid asks why. It's like, you're going to challenge me? My authority? The kid's just curious, even if it looks like they're being defiant. But what they're really doing is they want to understand the world. See, it makes sense to us why eating cookies or climbing on top of the bookshelves. Again, random examples off the top of my head. It makes sense to us why it's so obvious, but you know, maybe to the 3-year-old and 4-year-old, it's not so obvious. So do you want them walking away with a bunch of concrete rules? Or do you want to sprout within them a system of understanding that they can then extrapolate to many situations? Teach them about emotions. Oh, that kid over there, he's whether it's a book or a show or someone you see on the street, that kid over there, he's crying because he fell down and he's in pain and he's calling out to his father for help. Give a kid a way to understand what it means to experience sadness in a way that they can use that language in other situations too, where they can actually begin to understand their own emotions and the emotions of others. When we explain the rules that we have, we explain the binyan in a way that allows them to understand morality, that they can actually apply to other situations. Her last example is that you want to describe activities and not people. Often we'll say, like, you're saying, good boy, to dogs and to kids. Like, you're a good boy. Or like, good girl. Or bad boy. That was the wrong thing to do. We don't really explain to kids what it is that they're doing is wrong. We just kind of label the person as good or bad. You know, if a child hits, you don't say, bad, bad. But you could say, you know, stop hitting your sister. It hurts her. It makes her feel annoyed. And it's, you know, something that will not make her want to spend time with you. And the same for the praise. For the girl, something, good girl, to be specific, like good job not punching it back in the face. Right? You want to be specific and label the praise and label the behaviors. You know, we're so used to the good guys and bad guys and stories, but to explain, if we label someone as a liar, we're not being really specific. We could say, this person told a lie. Telling a lie is bad because it tricks other people and makes them feel bad and makes them feel that they can't trust you. Right? If you give a child more than just labels, good, bad, liar, cheater, if you give them verbs and understanding of behaviors, then that's something that they can extrapolate to other situations. It's more of a value system that they on their own can flourish. So if the binyan in this context would be just the rigid rules, then Zriya is allowing them the understanding that they could foster and grow emotions of other people, actions, behaviors, morality. That's what we're really trying to do. We're trying to foster a sense where they could on their own understand the world, and then that's what allows a person to develop autonomy, for a person to feel like, I know what I'm doing, I have a sense of what's going on. So what are our takeaways for tonight? Takeaways is, number one, that chinuch, Revolvi pointed out, is an area that requires a lot of study. It's not the kind of thing we could just do haphazardly, backhandedly. We need to study it, we need to understand it. There's research, there's experiments, we need to follow the research. both from the Torah and also from our behavioral analysts. We need to be able to understand what it is that's going on to make sure we're doing things that are not counterproductive to chinuch, because on the surface they seem to be working. Just like Hashem, we want to be able to build and to cause growth. We want to be involved and be active and be very much involved, but at the same time to allow things to grow organically on their own. We're looking to impart knowledge and also to allow people, children, on their own to learn the skills, to do it in their own way. So practical examples, teach them emotions that they could begin to understand themselves and others, explaining consequences, how things work, and describe actions as opposed to people. So happy this worked out. It's a wonderful first opportunity. Looking forward to another shiur after Pesach, part 2 of the series.
Sure. Thank you.